Hi everyone, this is Tim at North and South Podcasts. This is in association with Hope Street, a wellbeing organisation in Ormskirk that I've done some podcasting with. And I'm pleased to introduce you today to Ewan Corlett, who I first met on a Reiki course in October of last year. And we exchanged details, had some fantastic conversations. Ewan is a men's transformational coach and psychotherapist. And he's going to tell us a little bit more about that in a minute. But I had a chat with Ewan on the Reiki course, which was a 3-day thing. And he was sitting next to me. He had some fantastic conversations. Ewan's one of those people who, when you meet, after you've met them, you feel better about life. And he's just a great person to make an acquaintance with again. So, Ewan, great to catch up with you. How are you? What do you do? And what's been going on in your life?
Oh, thank you, man. That's such a beautiful thing to say. You know, Ewan's one of those guys you meet and you just feel better about life. I think that's probably the nicest thing I've ever heard, Tim. Like, genuinely. That's, yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's no, nice to see you and good to be here. So, I'm a bloke. Yeah, first and foremost, I'm just a bloke that has had his challenges in life. Had quite a lot of challenges with my mental health and addiction in my younger years, and then found my way into sobriety and been for a lot of therapy, a lot of coaching, a lot of support groups, Alcoholics Anonymous for the last 12 years. And about 7 years ago, I retrained as a therapist and I've been working as a therapist for the last five, six years. And then as I started working more with men, I realized that taking more of a coaching approach could be really effective for certain men. For some men, the therapy being more appropriate, depending on where they're at within themselves. And yeah, so that's my passion, helping men within their mental health, but really to reclaim their fullness, their wholeness as a man. And I also run online men's groups as well. So that's a bit about what I do. But I would also describe myself as an artist, a poet, a evolving yogi. I'm very much falling in love with yoga and breath work and really stepping into more embodiment practices for healing now as I move forward in my professional and personal development. Yeah, so, but really, I just love connecting with people on a heart level, like on a real authentic level, and helping people to really feel themselves in that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's very much, I kind of get an understanding now of what you've just said, how you want to be with people. When I spoke to you straight away, you know, you make connections with people, you make people feel at ease, you have discussions with people, you show an interest in people. And I really got that when I met you. And I think that obviously your life, you've had issues with physical and mental health. You've also had issues with addiction, and you've been pretty much on quite a journey, and you know, going through AA, etc. And over the last 7 years, you've kind of looked at those issues and said, right, what's going on there? Can I find out more to help myself? But now you're getting to a level where you're helping other people. Now I think that's fantastic. And I just want to say, you know, you get a lot of people who say, like, what's this obsession with men that, like, some people in the developmental world often talk about? And I think it's important to say that whenever people are concerned with issues surrounding men, it doesn't mean that they don't acknowledge that there are issues surrounding women. They're just saying that with men, there's a particular way that men view the world and experience the world, which can be difficult. And it's about getting beyond those kinds of issues to make those men better people. So it's not dismissing the other side by any stretch. How would you describe that kind of interest that you have in the male world, as it were?
Yeah, I do. I hear you completely. I think that sometimes there can be a misunderstanding I've had it from some women saying, you know, well, what about women's groups? And there are women's groups and there are men's groups. But I think this kind of, some people might see it as like a segregation. Well, why do we have to do work separately? And I think we have to do work separately because I think men's experience of conditioning emotionally is very different to women's experience of conditioning emotionally. Now, of course, like if we looked at it on an individual basis, yeah, they're one man, one woman might have had a very, very similar experience. But I do think there are real patterns for us men. You know, the whole boys don't cry, you know, the shaming that would go on amongst us as boys and as teenagers in and around our emotions, what it is to be a man, and all of these things that we carry into our adulthood as men. So I'm all about like normalizing talking about how you feel. But for a lot of men, I don't think a lot of men really know how they feel because they haven't learned how to connect with their body and the feelings that are coming up emotionally. So I do think emotions are more of a feminine energy within all of us, and that we've had that squashed as men. And so we're not in touch with our feminine energy, which means we've been running around on this planet, destroying everything, including women, for the feminine, for God knows, like hundreds of years, right? Because we haven't known how to be in our emotions, and because emotions are chaotic and they're... So yeah, I just think that there needs to be an understanding around what... If we just all listen to each other and have that open approach, then we can maybe understand, well, why do we have men's groups, and what is it that they bring? Like, let's be interested in that, because ultimately all we want is to come together in greater union, men and women, to heal the family unit so that there's less trauma, there's more love and understanding. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you did well there to kind of look at it at an individual level and then link it with a social level, and also like at a historical level, going back through, you know, basically the modern era and beyond, etc. Because I think that is important. I think the big key element, and it's something that I speak about every week, I spoke to Ian about it recently, Paul Coe, Steve, on earlier podcasts, is this idea of emotional repression when you get to a certain age, and the impact of that in later life. Now, one of the things I would not want to do is get in a time machine and go back 50 years and go and work on Liverpool docks. And one thing I would not like to do is go back in a time machine 70 or 80 years and go and live in a coal mining village and go and dig coal out all day. But I think what that offered in the past was a certainty of what it meant to have that role, rightly or wrongly. And that the modern world, it's hard to know exactly what you're meant to be. And I wouldn't want to be a woman by any stretch. I think that what women go through, childbirth, a lot of the pressures women are under, I think women deal with a lot of things a lot better than men, whereas men sometimes vice versa. But I think men aren't equipped for this modern world of not knowing what is kind of going on, because every 10, 20 years, everything changes. Yeah. And I do feel that men are lost, and that emotional repression means that you haven't got the tools to then navigate it. You know, that's kind of what I feel from some of the men I've spoken to.
Yeah, I agree completely, Tim. Beautifully, beautifully put, man. Like, exactly that. Exactly that. And like, oh, yeah, I just want to take that moment there just to give a massive shout out to women, right? Because like you said, like, what women have given, what women do, that the life they carry is just profound to me. Yeah. And I'd certainly know for me along my journey, I haven't been in full reverence to women. I haven't understood what they've been through and what they had to overcome and what they're still trying to overcome. So I can really empathize with why maybe some women struggle to understand, well, what, you know, men have hurt us, men have, so I get it. But where you're coming, I really get it from a female perspective. But we are talking there about men trying to navigate their way in the world. Yeah, because I think we're in a really, the rise of the feminine, because everything is moving constantly. And emotion, like if you think of emotions as more of a feminine energy, constantly moving and quite chaotic. We need more of a, we need to be strong in our masculine energies to be able to contain that emotion. To be able to contain the ebb and flow of society and the way things are developing now, which is really chaotic, right? Like you say, like how on earth do I navigate that when I haven't learned how to be with my emotions and I've repressed my authentic self all these years to try and be a role that was handed down from the coal mine times, or the, you know what I mean, it's still outdated from dad and dad's dad.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, every individual is different. The social, cultural context, there's genetic conditioning, there's environmental conditioning. And I don't think what we're discussing here is an attempt to put people in particular places and say, that's where you are. It's just an open discussion about the nature of reality, the nature of the world, and what might be considered the male perspective on things, whatever that means. I think it is very, very valuable. But this ties into a lot of kind of like philosophy. And one of the questions I had, and we kind of touched on it, is what would you describe your key philosophy to be? Is it an attempt to, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. So what's your key philosophy in terms of your mission or your understanding of things, as it were?
I would say that we live in a, I wanted to kind of quote, what came into my mind immediately there was Gabor Maté. I wanted to quote, we live in a traumatized world led by traumatized leaders.
Yeah.
And I suppose, so my philosophy for this world would be that in certifying ourselves through initiation, you know, the initiations, the rites of passages that men and women have to go through, to go from girl to woman, to go from boy to man, that if we focus on coming back to those rites of passage, we can develop really strong, emotionally intelligent, kind, compassionate leaders in the world who lead from their heart and are not tyrannical and are not motivated by their own egoic ends. And I think that's really challenging, right? So I suppose philosophy wise, I'm now thinking of Eckhart Tolle when he says in A New Earth about, you know, until human beings transcend the egoic mind, we are destined to repeat the chaos of the past. So my philosophy is that we're moving into a higher state of consciousness, which is in a deeper vibration of love. But in order to do that, we really need to look at our shadows. We need to look at the stuff that we're avoiding because it feels uncomfortable, it feels ugly. And the world is kind of geared up for that, right? So that we avoid, you know, we watch Netflix for hours on end. We're on our phones distracted all the time. Yeah, I would say my philosophy or hope maybe more for the world is that we learn to slow down a little bit more, to breathe and to come back into our body, come back into our hearts, that we can live authentically.
Brilliant. I don't know if it was it the philosopher Leibniz who said that the main problem with humanity is the inability of people to just sit in a room quietly for a few minutes and be content with themselves. And I think the distraction economy and the distraction culture at the minute, as a school teacher, what I see in terms of like concentration impacts and what technology does, people are living in like a big advert, and an advert where, I remember watching Natural Born Killers many years ago, which I don't know if you've seen that film.
I've seen it, yeah, yeah.
There's a few scenes where things are happening and like the audience is laughing at tragedy happening, you know, as if it's all a big game show. And this is like in the early 90s. And what have we had since then? People going on TV, making fools of themselves, and other people finding it funny and laughing. And I think that the attention economy, or the limited attention economy in the cultures of the modern world, people are detached. And there's a great quote from James Joyce about one of his key characters, where this man spent his life about 1 meter outside his body. You know, he was always looking around for the next big thing. And I think just as you said, to just center yourself and calm yourself and to just know where you are and what you are, and to work on that is essential. But I think that to get back into your body and just have a look around and know yourself, this idea of the shadow world, which comes from Jung, I think one of the best things I've done in terms of making myself better in recent years, and I'm still not perfect, I just had a chat with someone quite close to me then who was talking about things in my shadow world that I don't always see, is I think a lot of modern people understand the idea of getting the shadow world into the open and say, let's have a look. Whereas if I think about the generation before, particularly the male world, the shadow world was never examined. And again, it's a sweeping generalization. The key is now, if we do get the shadow world out into the open and look at the issues, the deep issues, what do we do about them? Because that's the harder thing, isn't it? To actually turn those realizations into actions to make ourselves better. And we're still programmed as hunter-gatherers, gatherer hunters. Our whole ego and our whole psychology is about surviving in wild nature. And yeah, we're applying that to the modern world. So if your phone doesn't come on straight away, that feeling you get of frustration, we weren't designed for that, to get wound up over a phone. So I think your mission, I think it's a very important one.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. So what services do you provide then? You do different types of therapy and men's groups, etc. What kind of things do you do as part of your mission, as it were?
Yeah, so I offer one-to-one therapy, and I predominantly work with complex PTSD, addiction, and such like. I offer one-to-one coaching for men, which is focused in and around reclaiming their throne, so to speak, reclaiming their sovereignty, full control over their life, which is a lot of embodiment and archetypal work. Men's groups. I have a couple of men's groups that I facilitate online, which is really about providing a consistent container for men to meet and explore the principles of which they wish to live by, and also to hold each other accountable in their growth. Yeah, I'm really passionate about the groups. I think with men's work, the groups, the retreats, the embodiment work is really where it's at, I feel, for men to break through the shackles of suppressed emotions, to give way to their whole self. I feel a lot like men or women, like most of us have been taught to repress our true self, right? Because we've been like you said before, we've been conditioned heavily by the world to be something that we think the world, that we need to be for the world to receive love. And the reality is that there is just love within us, and we just need to learn how to reaccess that. Mm. And we can't do that on our own. We need to be witnessed in our pain, held in our pain, and affirmed in it. Do you know what I mean? And normalized in it, so that we can get out of victimhood state and come back into our full power, full wholeness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, as you just said, that kind of holistic thing of going away on a retreat and, you know, being around a campfire or whatever, that opens up other parts of you to the emotional side of it. Like if someone gets a man in a room and says, right, let's talk about your emotions, you know, you're going to get a lot of, whoa, wait there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
If you've attached that to like physical things and times away, et cetera, and retreats, I think that's a much better way to get in there. But I think you and a colleague of yours, you're looking to develop these courses and do more kind of...
Yeah, so I'm involved with the Unmasked Man, which is an organisation that runs retreats and does coaching and men's circles, etc. And so what I've been working with them over this last year in facilitating retreats. I may do some of my own stuff, organise some of my own retreats in the coming times, but I haven't actually put any concrete plans in to do that as yet. Yeah. But these are spaces where, like you say, we sit around the campfire. That's one thing that is done. But there are a lot of very powerful men's work exercises that help the men to break through emotional barriers, to, for example, fully feel their anger so that they can get to the grief that hasn't been felt. And that's usually in and around the mother and father wound. And obviously, like abuse, childhood experiences in school, whatever is pertinent, that core wounding for the individual, so that they can feel that full suppressed emotion and let it go. You know what I mean? And begin to learn to feel again. And like in my own journey, like two and a bit years ago, I had a tumor removed from my stomach. And that tumor, for me, I realized with reflection, was largely about a lot of repressed emotion, a lot of grief that I had suppressed for many, many years, and unknowingly in many ways. We don't even know we're suppressing our emotions because it's so conditioned to do so, right? Until nature came along and said, right, I'm going to take this plug out of your stomach now. and release all of this emotion. Yeah, I'm really, really passionate about helping men just feel, you know?
I think that interesting thing about like the mind body link, which is often overlooked, particularly in the traditional Western world, I understand why that's the case, because I think there is some utility in saying, right, here's a problem, let's deal with that problem and do it in this way. But
yeah,
the holistic understanding of things is essential. And I know that when we did the Reiki course, you spoke about those tumors and said they were a wake up call. And you kind of implied that this wasn't me getting a tumor from the outside world. This was me developing a tumor, and now I'm going to do something about that in terms of a full healing. And I think that's wonderful, to take responsibility for things and say, what can I do, rather than I'm going to rely on the external world. By all means, use the external world.
Yeah.
Great. But what am I going to do about it? And I think that that's a very, very powerful message, to turn it round and have that kind of holistic mind body.
It's challenging. It was challenging though for me. Like, you know, the physical recovery and the emotional recovery from it has been intense, like really intense, whilst also doing the kind of work that I do. Do you know what I mean? I really hear you on that. Like, we have to take responsibility, and it's a bit of an alien concept maybe to people in the world, right? What, like, I have to take responsibility for the fact that I'm ill. Like, this has happened to me. And it's like, well, I know that I didn't consciously choose the patterns that I had throughout my life. However, they were happening within me. And so till I take responsibility for the fact that on some unconscious level I was creating them, then I can't heal. And like you say, like, we have to take responsibility holistically in finding the practices and modalities or connection, whatever it is that we need to heal. And for me that's been quite vast and varied, like yoga, breath work, groups, coaching, all varied, men's work, lots of varied approaches to help me feel more whole. So I don't think there's any, well, that's the whole nature of holistic, right? There is no one stop shop.
One thing I will say, like, I mean, if you catch a cold, if someone says to me, you've caught a cold because someone in your house has probably give you it, and colds are always adapting, and that's why there's never a cure for a cold. Like, I'm not going to blame myself. You know, there is an external stimulus out there. But I think that if you develop a particular condition, you know, diabetes or whatever, the doctor can say, right, take these tablets. Oh, and by the way, there's some lifestyle changes you can do. Okay. And you go, well, that's interesting. So I'm going to do them and take the initiative and to seize those opportunities as well. And there's a lot of evidence now to show that people who are positive, who were not like kind of celebrate a disease, but embrace it and go, right, I'm going to learn from this and make myself better. I'm going to learn from some of the things that I've done wrong in the past and make my life better. I think that's great. And I remember many years ago seeing a fella smoking outside a hospital, and he had an oxygen canister and he was having a smoke. And I just looked at him and I thought, the hell is he doing? He's got an oxygen canister for his lungs and he's having a smoke. Like, is he that addicted? And yeah, he was that addicted. Now I'd look at that guy and I'd go, that guy's self-images of himself, or there's a sub-personality in him who doesn't like that man and has got a very limited self-worth. And back then I didn't have that. And then you turn the lens on yourself and go, wait there, what about you? What's hidden in plain sight in you? Do you know what I mean? And that's wisdom, isn't it?
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful, brother. Mm. I love it. I absolutely love that. Yeah.
Mm.
It's that kind of thing, like, where whenever we're noticing something external, it's wanting to look at something internal. But maybe without awareness of that, we just become, we judge, and we judge and we project.
Mm. It's like that old quote, isn't it? It's a biblical one. Like, we often look at the chip of wood in someone else's eyes when we don't look at the huge piece of wood in our own eye. If you've got good people around you, they'll say to you, wait there, have you noticed this about yourself? And you need that sometimes, don't you? I mean, one of the best things I've started doing in recent years, I've always done journaling for a while, but I have an emotional journal and a gratitude journal. So I've done it this morning. I've wrote like about 3 pages, and anything that's on my mind, I kind of write about it and then come up with like why it's okay to feel like that and a potential solution. You don't always get a solution, but just by acknowledging it, that would have been okay. Now, if I'd have gone back 20, 30 years and would have gone into school writing an emotional journal, I would have been ripped apart. If I'd have like said to my dad, oh, look, Dad, I'm doing an emotional journal, he probably would have looked at me. And I think things are changing for the better, but there's a lot out there which is more accessible now where people can share things. And this idea of things happening to you, when you say, right, what can I do? I don't care what your situation is. And I remember hearing John Kabat-Zinn say this about, he's a meditation expert, the guy who's meant to have brought mindfulness to America. And he said, like, if I go and speak to someone and they're on their deathbed, he said, I've still got something to play with. I'm going to talk to them about making their life better, you know, even if it's for a few days. And I think that's very powerful to say, right, what's the situation? What can we do to make this situation better? And often our ego and our subpersonalities lock us down so we don't do that. And this holism, it's so important that you're not just doing one thing like, oh, I want to give this up, right, as a tablet. Oh, thanks, that might help me. You've got to do so much more than that if you really want to do something. Do you know what I mean? Take the initiative.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, we need to empower people in taking that initiative for themselves, don't we?
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier about Carl Jung and archetypes, and I've been dying to talk about Carl Jung and archetypes, and I've done this in an earlier podcast, but what do Jungian archetypes mean to you? Because there'll be a lot of people here thinking Freud, Jung, maybe they don't know those people, but they'll be thinking, were they them weird psychologists? So what's a Jungian archetype? How would you describe that?
So I would, what immediately comes to mind is the collective unconscious, that we're all interconnected, which is probably quite an alien concept for most people, that maybe we are just one organism, so to speak, and that archetypes are the commonalities within our psyche in and around the roles that we embody in life, that we need to embody. So the main four archetypes that I work with are king, warrior, magician, lover for men. And that when these are in balance with one another, then one is living in one's wholeness and feels content and in their full life energy, their full power, and is setting about living on this earth from a really heart-centered, strong place. Jung talked a lot about shadows, and you know that in order to be out of shadow, we have to understand the shadow. And the way that I've kind of understood what shadow basically means is large parts of our authentic self that have been repressed as a result of the conditioning that we underwent. And those shadows are operating within us all the time. And as we become more conscious to them, we can choose whether to act on them or not. And those shadows can be really quite toxic. So if you think about, say, the lover archetype, like we all have a sense of what it is to be a lover. And the lover is alive with life. You know, when you feel really alive with life, you know, you're in your creativity, you're playing you're doing a favorite hobby, you feel alive, you're with friends and you just feel joyous and free with your partner, and you're making love, or you're just connecting really deeply on something, feeling really seen. We all have that, right? And that's probably the easiest way to kind of understand it, that we all have, it's something that exists within us all. And so it's the commonality that binds us, that bonds us in union. And if we can understand, staying with the lover, like we have a lot of addiction in our society, and that would be a shadow of the lover. Like I didn't get enough. I didn't feel loved as a child. I don't know how to receive love in the world. Therefore, I focus on something external to get a dopamine hit, which gives me a feeling of release, of soothing, and I confuse that with love. And so that would be a shadow that is playing out actively in the world.
That's a great example, actually, about how the lover archetype, the issues with that and its expression can lead to the addiction of the false self-love, whereas you view yourself as the drugs make me feel better. And then I feel loved, even for a small amount of time. But ultimately, it's not solving the problem, is it?
No. And so, yeah, so a large part of the archetypes is understanding that these shadows are existing. What was lacking for us as children? I think that's the easiest way to say that for all of us, we probably didn't have our needs fully met. And therefore, there are shadows within us, the parts of ourselves that are trying to get their needs met. And we can't get those needs met externally fully. We have to learn how to meet them within ourselves. If we want to feel that peace of mind and that contentment, that wholeness, we will only receive that from within. We will never be able to fill the hole with drugs, sex, food, entertainment. I mean, if you don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't do those things, but if you've got balance within yourself, then you're not making those the answer to the hole that you might feel within the emptiness.
Yeah, I think that's superbly put. I think one of the interesting things as well, looking at like how different societies around the world have developed, is like commonalities in some of the religious archetypes, whereby different groups around the world, there's similarities in the idea of worship and sacred things, the idea of a higher power. Now, you might say that's a commonality of mental function based on evolution, etc. But there are deep things within our minds which seem to, I wouldn't say predate us, but sometimes like there's a commonality of things. Like when people are experiencing mental distress, they sometimes experience images, and other people are experiencing them images around the world as well. And it's just interesting where those things come from. And as Jung said, these could be deep archetypes which have come from the collective unconscious, which represents and manifest in your shadow world. But I mean, a lot of archetypes are positive, don't get me wrong. It's about finding the balance and looking at those. Some people don't like Jung for these kinds of reasons, but the older I get, the more I kind of value Jung for the
Jung
fact
was,
that
yeah, me too. Me too. Jung was incredible, right? I mean, the guy literally lost his mind for 2 years. The way I understand that is his ego died, and therefore he didn't feel like he existed, because we need the ego to feel like we exist. Otherwise, who am I, right? There is no I. He went like into the abyss of not having an identity intentionally. So that he could, explore this shadow world, and then he came back. I mean, it's and so yeah. I mean, like, I know through my own lived experience when I read his stuff, and it's pretty in, like, you go down the rabbit hole with his stuff, but it is profound, because my experience fits what he talks. And like, when you explore different modalities like holotropic breath work and things like that, certain plant medicines, they will the medicine will or the breath work will take you into your body, and your inner guidance system will take over and show you the archetypes. I've experienced that through holotropic breath work, and I can't deny it. When I'm shown it within my psyche, it's quite profound and beautiful as well. Beautiful.
You and I feel like we could talk about archetypes till the cows come home. One thing I'll just say before I forget, have you seen that documentary, The Work, about the men in the prison in the United States
I
doing?
haven't seen that yet. No, I keep it's like right at the top of my list, but
Well,
I just, yeah, it's on Amazon, isn't it?
yeah, it sounds like what you do, and I would urge you to watch that. It left a profound impact with me, that about how big alpha male men come together and literally reduce themselves to babies crying about trauma with other men around.
Amazing, right?
Feel therapeutically feel like they've dealt with it afterwards. But I don't want to ruin it, but it's unbelievable, the work. Well, good. And it's right up your alley. Now, the last question we're going to ask, because I know time is precious today for you, is this concept we discussed when we did the Reiki course called Christ consciousness. Now, a lot of people might now hear and go, oh, is religion, I'm switching off. Me and you, we had a chat about how we don't like established religions, and it's not about that. And we're using Christ just almost as a label to give it
Yeah,
some
like an
kind
arch
of,
or like an archetype, right?
like an archetype. So what does Christ consciousness mean to you then?
Well, it means forgiveness and love. Literally, if that's what it means to me, it means this might sound, it might almost sound really, it's funny, this whole religion thing, isn't it? Because I wrestled with this, right? I wrestled with, I experienced consciousness of Christ within my body. And it was the most beautiful and peaceful thing I've ever, I can't explain what happened, but it was in Angelic Reiki healing. And I'd never been to Angelic Reiki healing before. It came about through our friend Alex, who directed me there. I was open. I went there. I surrendered to the process. I had a profound experience where I was crying and shaking and releasing all of this emotion. And then this just immense peace came over me. And I said, Jesus. And I don't know where that word came from, but it was like it just rose up through me. And then my whole body tingled. And so I don't need to understand it. I know what I felt, I don't need to intellectualize it. From an archetypal embodiment perspective, there was this teacher on the earth, Jesus, who was a man of forgiveness and love, right? Human beings took that and they, for want of a better word, bastardized it into a into a book, into a dogma, into and of course human beings had enough of that, and then they turned their back on the church, and now we worship things and materialism, right? But I think what's important here is our archetypal energies represent exactly that energy. Like, what kind of energy do you want to live with in your life? Love, forgiveness, peace, contentment, understanding, humility. These are things that I have been walking towards a long time, because I was walking in the other direction, angry, hateful, resentful, bitter, like guilty, shameful. Like, I lived that for the first 30 years. 30, 35 years of my life. And so Christ consciousness, I would like to say Christ consciousness is like a consciousness that is accessible through the archetypal field, let's say, to anyone, just as angry, hateful consciousness is accessible to anyone. It's just what you're going to choose. And I could just call that love consciousness or forgiveness consciousness, but I choose to call it Christ because I felt a presence within myself that I can't explain, and the word came out, and so that's all I need to know.
That's beautifully put and explained. And I think, again, like, you know, someone in Tibet might call it something else, and someone in a Maori 1,000 years ago, before there was any Western contact, might call it something else. But it's this idea of transcendence, of something bigger than you, which you can access in a number of ways. But when you have them profound experiences, who knows why we have these labels? But you could argue that regardless of the name we give, it represents a deep aspect of human nature and our potential. And I think you explained that really well there.
Definitely of our full potential to step aside from the ego and allow our collective desire to feel love and connected and at peace to just come through and be in that. And what I've learned is that requires me, it requires a self-forgetting, right? It requires, like, Ewan to get, Ewan to get out of the way, right? Like, what Ewan wants and what Ewan thinks is right and what Ewan, you know, because my experience has been, when I put that to one side and go, I'm just going to let life take over, the experience is beautiful and profound. And I want to offer your listeners a book recommendation, Michael Singer, The Surrender Experiment. Listen to that. It will change your life. It changed mine. And there we go.
There you go. Ewan, I think we've got more conversations to have in the future, but I know that the time is precious. We'll put all your details in the podcast notes. You're based in South Wales, but you do a lot of online stuff, don't you? So
West
you can
Wales,
get in contact.
Yeah,
West Wales, is it? Okay. My bad. But listen, wonderful to talk to you. And I like you even more now than I did before. Such a great guy.
Likewise, Tim.
And great to speak to you.